This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In podcast network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am your host, The Vern. We are in the midst of doing our Christmas cult club, even though this is going to go way past Christmas time. It is Friday, December 6th, and today is my birthday, folks. That's right. If you want to know how old I am, let me tell you this way. If you read Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I'm the age that is the answer to everything. So I'm going to leave it at that. If you read the book, then you'll know exactly how old I am. For today's show, I'm going to do things slightly different. Since we are in the midst of doing our Christmas cult club and talking about cult films, I'm going to be playing for you the very first podcast I was ever on. I mean, the very first time I even got into Skype and got a microphone and everything. I was a guest on the Lambcast, which is the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs. And each month, different bloggers and podcasters, they get to choose a movie that they want to discuss. And the movie that I picked was Heathers. And I was very excited that it won, which also meant that this was going to be my first podcast experience on the show. I was still doing my Vern's Video Vanguard website, which is no longer available. Also, I was joined by host Dylan Fields, who once hosted Band I Love Film Site. And I was joined with guest Daniel Fortity of Forge Movie Reviews and Sam Fortison of Duke in the Movies. These sites are no longer available. I'm hoping that these cats are still available on social media so I can tag them. I'm pretty sure they are. But we had a really fun conversation talking about the movie Heathers. And so I'm going to play that for you after I play a few ads from some other great podcast shows that you should check out. And then also during the show, there's an ad for a show called The MILFcast, which was a podcast of Mad Love Films. The MILFcast is hosted by Heather Bassendale and Ty Parker, and they went on to a short hiatus, but I was recently listening to Whatever with Jason Soto, and Heather Bassendale was a guest on that podcast, and she mentioned that the show will be coming back. The MILFcast, that is. So, very excited for them to release new episodes of the MILFcast. The MILFcast is one of those podcasts that got me into podcasting in the first place, and I was a guest on their show a couple times, and I'm grateful if their show does come back again. It's really great stuff. So let's do this right now. I'm going to play some other ads from some other great podcast shows that you should definitely seek out and listen to, and we'll be back with the Lambcast episode number 114 talking about Heathers. All right, so enjoy everybody.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello there. Do you like movies but feel overwhelmed by the avalanche of titles available every week in the theaters and on streaming services? Do you struggle with justifying the increasing cost of movies at the theater or whether to pick up another streaming service? Well, I have a resource for you. One Movie Punch. Your movie review podcast for currently playing, newly streaming classic and cult movies. One movie per day, every day. We track the theaters, streaming services, and the occasional physical release to find the best movies currently available. We watch every film, then distill it into a short 3 to 5 minute review and publish a daily podcast. And now with year two, we've gone spoiler-free for all movies within the last 3 years and bringing on a team of reviewers with brand new perspectives and selections. Want more information? Head over to www.onemoviepunch.com to subscribe to the daily podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at onemoviepunch and Facebook at www.facebook.com/onemoviepunch. We'll see you there.
If you like intelligent and smart movie discussion,
Face is a zombie movie.
How did he write a book if he doesn't have an arm?
or want to hear the latest news on your favorite actor,
talk some Julianne Moore, I guess.
Whales have more films than Zoe Saldana.
Then check out The Lambcast, where no question is too risque.
Rachel, do you have a mouth?
Check out The Lambcast, the official podcast of The Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.blogspot.com. Si habla español.
Hola y bienvenido a la
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com. Now, but I just want to play on my panpipes. I just want to drink me some wine. As soon as you're born, you start dying. So you might as well have a good time. Oh no, sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell. Sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell.
Hello and welcome to the 114th episode of the Lambcast, the podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as The Lamb, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. The Lamb is the premier movie blog directory with over 1,200 member blogs, and this is the podcast where a rotating roundtable of Lamb members get together to discuss the latest goings-on in our own worlds of film. I'm your host, Dylan Fields of Man I Love Films, which can be found at manilovefilms.com. Today, I'm joined by Daniel Fogarty, a.k.a. Fogues of Fogues Movie Reviews.
Dylan!
Fogues. Fogues' site can be found at, what do you know, FoguesMovieReviews.com. Next up, Sam Fragoso of Duke of the Movies.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sam is joining us the day after, the morning after, at 9 o'clock of his prom.
Yeah. Did you have a good time? I know. Did you have a good Dedication time? At its finest.
Did you have a good time, Sam?
A lovely time.
A lovely time.
It was great.
Not the answer I was expecting. Yeah. Sam's site can be found at dukeinthemovies.com. And finally, we've got a newbie to the Lambcast. It is the Vern of the Vern's Video Vanguard. What's up?
Corn nuts.
What was
corn
that?
Nuts. Corn nuts. Corn nuts. Corn nuts.
And the Vern site can be found at videovanguard.com. And this is the part where I say, as is customary, we ask newbies to talk about it themselves and their site just a little bit. So do that now.
Ooh, all right. Well, it is a complete debauchery. Total complete debauchery. Actually, Rich Santorum is now teaming up with the adult industry to take down my site. Sasha Gray has even said I go too far sometimes. No, it's just a run-the-mill movie site. I do reviews and lists and other random things.
You should have ended it there.
I should have.
After the Sasha Gray.
That was quite the opener.
They do.
Well, how'd you get started all that? What got you into this whole business?
The blogging thing right there. I just was started. Well, actually, it was the Examiner site. I started writing reviews for Examiner and then was online for starting your own blog. I'm like, oh, well, that sounds easy enough to do. I'll just do my own site, and then I just did that for like a year and been doing it ever since. And I recently joined up with The Lamb back in December when you guys had your little Oscar poll thing going on, your Oscars, and now I do the Trailer Trash Tuesdays on there, and yeah, I love it.
I was going to mention that. It seems to be pretty popular.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool.
I try.
And now you're here on The Lambcast. You've completed
yes.
the ritual.
Woohoo!
I have a question. Why do you call it trash? Like, I mean, because some trailers are actually pretty decent.
You know, it's a catchy name, Sam.
It is, yeah. I can't think of
trailer any trash?
Well,
because, like, are you referring to, like, the trailer trash people that live in the South type thing? Or, I don't know.
Are you being serious right now?
No, I'm kidding. I know you live in Phoenix. And
there's no trailers in Phoenix, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
No, I just always thought, not live in Phoenix.
I just thought it was interesting. The trash. I don't know. Trailer trash.
Plus, nothing goes with trailer and trash. I can't, you know, trailers, trash, TR names, they go together.
Trailer talk, trailer trash. These are the two most popular.
Yeah.
Anyway. First podcast, Vern?
Actually, not only that, but this is my first time on Skype.
Wow.
Nice.
No, because I just downloaded the application this morning.
Well, I'm glad it works.
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Later on, we will give our rants and raves of the week, as well as play some Last Land Standing, but now it's time for our feature discussion.
Heather Chandler, Heather McNamara, Heather Duke, Veronica Sawyer.
Why are you such a mega brat?
Because I can be.
The most powerful clique at Westerberg.
Not Veronica. Troll match?
Most people would die to get into it.
Heather number one just looked right at me.
I'm worshipped Westerberg, and I'm only a junior.
Veronica would kill to get out of it.
You were nothing before you met me. You were a Girl Scout cookie.
Okay, it is time once again for our Movie of the Month here on the Lampcast. We had another tense battle with our Movie of the Month poll, but in the end, the Vern's pick of Heather's beat out Jason Soto's Frozen pick. I know we destroyed the vote total. There might have been some shenanigans going on. I can't speak to that. I don't know if anyone else here can. But
oh, yeah. I'll just admit to saying that... there was one time, I think I voted for a movie four times, but it still didn't win, so I think it was Blue Velvet, maybe.
Let's say this, at this point in time, having experience with this and running polls on my own site and whatnot, I expect a range of voting for like three votes. I expect that people can vote from their work computer, home computer, and phone computer.
And multiple browsers, don't forget that.
I didn't do that. I mean,
if they're given three votes, it should count three times because they're passionate enough to vote for their candidate three times. But anything after that gets sketchy. So, like, if you're exceeding three votes in a poll, something's up.
Well, having won the poll, Laverne has won himself a spot on the show, of course, and the hosting duties for this segment, leading the Heather's discussion. So,
oh, is that what we're doing now?
Yeah.
That's
the champion.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Sam didn't get the memo.
You didn't get the memo.
You get the glory and honor of taking over the hosting duties from me for the segment, which also does me a favor. So it's a win-win for everybody, right?
All right, like that. All right, let's get into it, folks. All right. So the movie of the month this week is Heather's. And really briefly here, if you have not seen this movie before, we're going to be discussing a lot of spoilers about the movie. So if you have not seen this movie, press pause. Go watch the movie. It's on Netflix right now. But real briefly now, let me get into it. Heathers has Winona Ryder and Christian Slater as young lovers who become so sick of the way classmates have been treated by the so-called popular kids that they decide to go on a killing spree. But to cover for their crimes, they make it look like their victims committed suicide. This actually causes more of a problem because the person that got killed becomes even more popular, even with the person who originally hated them. I put this as my movie of the month because this movie for me represented my high school years. A lot of people have their favorite movies like 16 Candles, Dazed and Confused, and Scott Pilgrim. But for me, it was Heathers. Heathers was the perfect movie that showed what high school life was really like.
Quick question. What high school did you go to?
No, I loved my high school. But it was the whole social class economic warfare that was going on between the different social groups.
That is funny that you mentioned that. I think everybody has that one movie that they definitively think of. All right, this was what high school was like for me.
And this is not it.
No. For me, it was more Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just a slightly different timing and that sort of thing. And but I can clearly understand how, you know, this would resonate with someone to that extent. And, in fact, I think it did. It was named one of the greatest high school movies of all times in one of these – polling organizations.
And it's Weekly, I think I saw that in.
And voted seven times on that, so I think.
And it definitely has become a cult movie that has a lot of popularity, so I can see that totally, Vern.
And it's got, you know, a lot of great dialogue too, but not only the fact that this film, you know, represents, like, in my version of what high school is like, but also the hypocrisy of these kids and their suicide, because a lot of the cast members, a lot of the characters are really hated people, and when they die, they suddenly become celebrities. And I'm reminded a lot about, you know, like Whitney Houston, how we just hated her before.
And now I'm actually reminded more of Michael Jackson. But
okay, that too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like we're just kind of making... death forgives all sins.
Yeah.
There you go. Dylan with the appropriate quote. Nicely done.
Thank you.
That's why you were on the show.
That's why.
But it's a, you know, it's a dark movie, and dark comedies don't get made much today.
Not on a commercial level,
perhaps. Not on a commercial level, yeah. I mean, this movie here was not very popular when it first came out. It didn't start becoming popular until it reached like home video.
Yeah, I mean,
that happens for a lot of movies, though. I mean, I just wrote up The Shawshank Redemption not too long ago on my site, and it was not a success in the theaters, and it's one of the most beloved movies ever now. So, I mean, that happens a lot.
Well, that has a good story behind it. I mean, it did poorly.
It wasn't a failure, but it wasn't any runaway success.
And it was mainly because, one, if you remember Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction. Well, right. That was the year I was born, obviously. You remember, you're older than me. But it had a terrible title.
Yeah.
It's about prison, and that wasn't a sell. But it's like one of the number one like grossing movies, like via VHS.
Home video.
Yeah, yeah. And it got huge in the coming years. So.
Right. Does anybody have anything on Heathers and know why it didn't?
I don't know. I mean, it was small budget. I was looking on IMDb. It only had a budget of $3 million, made about $1 million. But so I, and none of the people were stars really at the time. I think this was one of Christian Slater's first movies, if not his first. I mean, he was in TV a little bit, but and Winona Ryder. I mean, wasn't this before Beetlejuice?
Actually, no. This is like after Beetlejuice. Right after like Lucas and Beetlejuice, she did this movie. Funny thing enough, too. Like Jennifer Connelly. Was originally going to be Veronica Sawyer, but she turned it down. I was looking here too that Brad Pitt auditioned to be the role of JD.
And you know what my favorite almost casting in this movie was?
What's that?
That Heather Graham was going to be the Heather that was the cheerleader.
Yeah.
And get this, she was only 17 at the time, and her parents turned down the role. You know, because they still had control over her career and whatever, because it was too dark, because the material was too dark. And I'm just thinking to myself, dude, within a couple of years, that chick is doing Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
A decade later.
10 years.
Yeah.
A year later, she did Drugstore Cowboy.
Yeah. Right? Okay, see?
Oh, yeah.
Vern's got my back. You guys
Thank
are
you, buddy.
Over.
Thank you.
Which... We should stay on top. I mean, Drugstore Cowboy, infinitely better than this, right? I mean...
It sounds like Sam's a hater. Sam, get it out of the way. Sam,
okay, you know, here it is. I mean, it's an unconventional 80s high school movie. I mean, completely, in my mind, polar opposite to Say Anything, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Breakfast Club, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, whatever.
And that's what I love about it.
Maybe it speaks to you on a certain level. To me, it just wasn't engaging at all. It wasn't inspiring. It didn't provoke really any emotion. I mean, there was some good dialogue, like you said. And Winona Ryder was good. Seeing her young was interesting. I don't really know Christian Slater that well. I haven't seen his filmography. So, but the film just kind of sat there for me, and it didn't do much. So... Again,
Christian Slater did kind of fall off the map a little.
Yeah, but
was that an attempted Christian Slater?
Yeah,
I didn't know if anybody else was gonna. I was trying to sneak it into that window, like that Skype window, when no one was talking.
I know you do a Jack Nicholson, and then
they're related.
Exactly, he does the Jack Nicholson. So yeah, I can.
I'm
see
like
it.
Jack's little brother.
Well, I'll chime in here as well, since we're on the topic. I can kind of see where Sam's coming from. The reason I say that is because a lot of the, I guess the diatribes, you could say, that Slater goes on, I don't buy into, because I think it's proven by the end of the film that they're all bullshit, and that he is just, he's just pissed because nobody loves him, and he's going to do all this shit. He's going to do what he wants to justify his means.
But you don't believe that, dude. I mean, like, that kind of climactic sequence in the boiler room, I didn't believe, like, I never understood his motivations, and I didn't, not for a second, believe, oh, no one loves me, that's why I'm doing it. Like, that never, I always thought perhaps it's his relationship with the father, but.
Well, I know,
but I mean, I don't know.
He was just more into chaos than anything.
Yeah, I didn't buy that, so.
Well, Vern, I got your back on
okay,
this.
Okay, Sam, buddy.
I think one of the things that you might be missing in the equation, and you know, you're offering a nice different perspective, though, and that's that perhaps, Vern, we do, you know, you would have to cede that perhaps this movie doesn't stand the test of time as well as maybe some of the other movies from the 80s that were more optimistic and, you know, did, you know, portray the culture more positively. You know, I think the John Hughes movies are still, you know, very well regarded and are perhaps more accessible to today's audiences. I think, Sam, one of the things you might be missing is that perspective of the contemporary time where, you know, the satire of this movie felt very sharp, very topical, very timely. And, you know, if you were there, it might have a little more bite for you. No. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I understand. I don't mean to be
dismissive.
It's fine. The satirization for me doesn't hold up. And what you're saying about John Hughes movies, I think that's kind of, you know, a cop out, because positivity doesn't necessarily mean that it resonates or stands the test of time. I mean, I'm completely prone to negative films or satirizations of contemporary high school life, whatever. But I just don't think it works on any level. But again, I didn't live in the time, but that still doesn't justify it being, in my mind, a mediocre film. I mean, the good movies stand, and then that's kind of proven.
You know,
so,
folks, I disagree with you there with what you were saying about how it's more or less a product of its time. Say what you will about kind of what I was saying about Slater's motivations and how they may or may not be bullshit, but I think the message of the movie is one that endures when you get right down to it, which is the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, they keep knocking off the Heathers, they knock off the popular kids, and a new one sprouts up.
Yeah.
And the cliques of high school don't change, and that's what they get, that's what they learn, and I think that stays true to today just as well.
No, and you have a point there, and I certainly wasn't saying that. I just think perhaps it might speak better if you did have that perspective of the time, because a lot of the dialogue, a lot of things, you know, that's what happens sometimes to very timely and very, very pop culture infected movies, is that as they age, they lose that element.
Sure.
If it's something that's very of the moment, it can do great then, but sometimes maybe it doesn't age as well. And I think there is a lot of that in this. I think there's a lot of the dialogue. I think there's a lot of the dress. I think there's just a lot of the environment that just doesn't feel the same now.
It's a bit hyper-stylized, I'd say.
Well, I mean, you mentioned too. You said that this is like a negative movie, and I never thought of this as being a negative movie because it does end on a very uplifted message. You know, like just don't be a dick, all right?
Right.
Or people will kill you, all right?
It's an odd message considering she had to kill like 5 people to get that message. But
well, you know, the first one doesn't really count. That was a mistake. Things happen. She was trying to do milk and orange juice, you know? I mean, come on now. We all tried that prank before, and it ended horribly, and someone smashed into a coffee table. I mean, come on now.
More insights into the Vern's high school years.
Come on now. We've all been to prom before once, and we had that happen to them before, right?
What I found really kind of frightening, looking back on this, is this was a movie made at a time before, you know, there was this, you know, this really heartbreaking proliferation of school violence and school shootings and tragedies where things like this have actually come to life. I mean, when this came out, I think it very much was just satire, and you could look at it as, you know, kind of a dark comedy that's a reaction to the other bright and happy movies of the time and the, you know, the 80s overall. But there's some scary stuff that has followed in the years since then that sheds some of these things in a different light and makes them much less of a laughing matter.
Yeah, you can never release this movie today. If this movie was made today, I don't think it would be released. Studios would not want to touch this movie at all. That's why you had like Studio New World Pictures doing it, a small independent company, released the movie. But if it was made today, it would go straight to VOD, I think. A lot of studios are not going to touch this subject with a 10-foot pole. And I'm glad that Michael Lehman and Danny Waters kind of had the guts to go ahead and do it. They said, look, we're going to make a movie, a social satire movie about kids in high school. We are going to make the anti-John Hughes movie, because I think it was like probably the first R-rated teen comedy next to, well, not really, you know, R-rated teen comedy, because there was like Breakfast Club before, but kind of the first like teen comedy to tackle dark subjects like teen suicide. In fact, I think it's probably the first movie to tackle something like teen suicide, because I don't think there's ever been a movie doing it before, even the vein of
Better Off Dead.
Well, okay, all right, think about that.
It's the only one I would have ever thought of, but it fits.
Yeah, it does. Okay. I didn't think about that. Okay. All right.
But I think your point still stands. Better Off Dead is an absurdist comedy that doesn't really take suicide seriously at all.
Yeah, I don't consider Better Off Dead to be a dark comedy, not so much like Heathers is.
No.
I mean, because Heathers does get really dark.
Heathers is a pitch black comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it starts off, you know, very dark, the way all of them are in the cafeteria, doing that prank on Martha Dump Truck, and it's funny because you're laughing with them, and then as it goes further and further, and Christian Slater and Winona Ryder, they go through the victims, it just gets more and more sinister, to the point they're in the boiler room, it becomes a suspense movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about how this wouldn't get made today.
I can't
help but thinking of this movie's direct descendants, which the bright and shining one is Mean Girls, because I can't help but watch this and think, hey, Mean Girls aped this pretty well, just minus the death.
Mm-hmm.
Short of that, it's essentially the same film. And but also you could see something like Saved plays into this as well, if you guys have seen that. Definitely would not get made in the same vein, but they're still making things that kind of tackle some of the same issues.
Well, and then I saw on, I think it was like the Mad Love Film site, they did a review of Jawbreaker, which is also kind of another descendant.
I never saw that one.
I don't know I forgot who reviewed it, though. But yeah.
I think Wayne did.
Okay.
I was laughing because isn't that your site?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean I've seen every review.
I know. I just find that.
I've seen parts of that's the one with Rose McGowan, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, Jawbreaker.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jawbreaker was kind of decent. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It does have a score of imitators, it seems, Dylan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, another interesting thing too. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Daniel Waters, the guy who wrote this, and he actually wrote a lot of movies that I had no idea he wrote these, but these are awesome movies. He wrote like Demolition Man and Batman Returns and Hudson Hawk. But he originally wanted to have Stanley Kubrick direct this movie. I mean, he actually sent letters out to Kubrick before this movie went to production to try and get it made. And I would be very curious to see, you know, what Kubrick would do with this movie. I don't know what you guys think about
that.
He would
probably stay away from it.
Yeah, he's tackled some controversial fare in his day.
Yeah, so, I mean, especially he did like, the Cold War before, I think teen suicide would be kind of up his alley. Oh,
so, yeah, I don't know what you guys think about
that. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to see.
Certainly shot his sights pretty high on that one.
Yeah, right.
Ended up with a first-time feature director, but he also went on to have a pretty good career, too.
Yeah, Michael Lehman also did Hudson Hawk. He did Airheads. Love that movie. Just watched the last...
He did Because I Said So. Clearly a standout.
Well, he's still working, so... You know.
I actually was kind of amazed at how many of the teen stars that were in this movie... Well, I shouldn't say how many, but just the three main teen stars that we associate with this movie all kind of had a degree of, you know, fall from grace, burnout, you know, between Shannon Doherty, Winona Ryder, and Christian Slater, I think, at varying points, because obviously Winona went on to be, you know, quite a star for a number of years, but... their careers are all kind of in the "where are they now" file, and that was just interesting that were all together at once.
Even the biggest tragedy was the actress Kim Walker, who played Heather Chandler, the one that says "fuck me gently with a chainsaw." She died of a brain tumor.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I did not know that.
10 years ago, yeah, she was young.
Yeah, very young actually. Like even like I think like right after, well. I forgot actually when the date was when she actually did die from that, but yeah.
2001.
And that cuts the legs right out from under me bitching about the actors' careers.
No kidding.
Sorry.
Oh. Well, so, I mean, but... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, whether you love this movie or not, I think you have to appreciate the performances of at least Slater and Ryder. I mean, I don't think you can do much better in terms of teen or early 20s acting as it comes to Winona Ryder. And then when I see this, I see why Christian Slater became the star that he was. I mean, he was never a super mega huge star, but he certainly had charisma and was much more interesting than, I don't know, your boilerplate teen actor of the day. Look at the guys who played the jocks, for example, who were probably in their mid-20s at that time, but still. You see this, you see Pump Up the Volume, and it's like, yeah, I get the appeal. I mean, I like watching Christian Slater in this, at least until he goes nuts.
I think the main appeal for the movie, though, was kind of the counter-programming element of it. I know a lot of people latched onto this one because they felt more disaffected, you know, with high school than they did, you know, the loving tribute that a lot of other movies were giving it, you know. They weren't necessarily on board with the worship of it, you know, and they kind of wanted to send it up. And so a lot of people latched onto this one kind of as a, you know, it speaks more to them than a lot of other movies did.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think Breakfast Club worships high school by any means. I definitely don't think Say Anything does. I mean, I think it romanticizes, you know, the romance, especially in Say Anything, but I don't know. I guess I don't really understand the counterexample. I mean, I see the film, Heather's, and I agree it's unordinary, but I think we're kind of sweetening up John Hughes movies a little too much, in my opinion. But
well, okay, I mean, you're right about that, but I think there was an enormous trend of movies during that time that were showing just high school as an awesome and fun time.
Yeah.
Even, and Breakfast Club might be a standout example, Sam. That's one of the reasons why I love The Breakfast Club so much, because I think it did portray high school and peel back the glamour a lot more than a lot of other movies did. So that wouldn't be one that I would point to, but like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Fast Times or even movies like Weird Science, there were a ton of movies out there where high school kids were having the time of their lives, and it was just a big party. And,
yep, exactly.
16 Candles.
Yep.
There were a lot of them out there. So you can point to Breakfast Club as an example of one that wasn't, and say that, you know, obviously not all movies were like that, but there were a lot of them. And we're just naming the big ones. We're not even naming all the knockoff, cheapo imitators that were out there, you know? Even the ones where the protagonists were losers, like Better Off Dead, which Dylan brought up earlier.
Yeah.
You know, Lane is still victorious in the end, and he has a great time along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Despite wanting to kill himself.
Right, at the beginning.
But yeah, like you said before, it was basically just a complete opposite to all those sort of like run of the mills John Hughes flicks, and that's what I love the most about it. I love the fact that it does, you know, start off dark, and then it's darker and darker and darker, but at the end becomes really happy, which is the complete opposite to the original ending that I want to discuss about a little bit. But honestly, before I do that, Fodes, I don't know if I actually got your, you know, take on the movie. Do we skip over you? Does it sound like we skipped over you?
Well, I kind of thought I'd been putting it out there all along. I love it. I think it's very funny. I think it's very bright satire. I think it's a great example of an 80s movie. Okay. I think it, you know, could be held up as an example of, you know, the times and the decade. I know that it really wound its way deeply into the heart of a lot of people from that time. I don't know that it's carried on that kind of legacy. Like, for example, Sam just speaks, you know, it is a great perspective as someone who's coming to it fresh, who doesn't have that 80s perspective, is seeing the movie for the first time now, and it's really not resonating with him. And I wonder if he would be, you know, a really good example of what a lot of people would feel about it. I don't know.
Okay, that's one of the I agree with you to a certain point right there, folks. Because I recently just had one of my friends watch it for like the first time in a while here, and she loved it. She thought that it greatly represents her high school years as well. And she was one of the popular kids. She was in cheerleading and everything like that. But she definitely saw all those like social tropes that were happening in that movie. You know, she knew exactly where each clique hung out and everything. And
who's cracking up back
me? I don't know what you're implying. Are you saying I'm not popular? Is that what you're saying?
No. You're not. Oh, come on. No, I did not say that at all.
You're not popular. No. Seriously, I don't know how old your friend is. But I mean, Dan brings up a good point. Also, I've as kind of reviewing movies, I've probably seen a lot more than your friends. So I'm kind of okay. I'm well versed in 80s, you know, dialect and film. It simply didn't work for me, and it could be like Dan said, you know, my high school days. Well, I'm still in high school, but it simply doesn't compare. It was fine.
The dialogue was great. That's the best part. They have some of the best quotes in that movie. They have some good, with the chainsaw, and
they have some good lines. That didn't do anything for me.
It didn't do anything for you.
Well, you know, here's an interesting point. Sure. I think this movie, as you guys have kind of expounded upon here, not only was it a counterexample, is what you're saying, but it was kind of not racy, but provocative. I would think. Like unordinary, is that kind of right? You know, the dialogue was a bit out there and a bit kind of over the top. I mean, is that accurate?
I think that's fair to say.
Okay, well,
it was like a Diablo Cody script that worked.
See, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought the kind of absurd kind of language and style added to the dark
humor.
There's
Steve. Look, well, here's the thing. I guess I've been kind of raised on more upbeat, fast-paced, quick-talking, mean-spirited type films like Mean Girls, like we mentioned, that this doesn't kind of provoke me in a way that it may you two. So, and I think it's a Diablo Cody script that doesn't work. So, yeah, again, it's just a kind of, it could be age, you know, where we're from and where we've grown up, but the bottom line is that it didn't work for me.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I get that. I mean, coming from a guy who regularly does not get older films and says many of the same things, you know, you've seen the same thing done in maybe not exactly the same thing, but you've seen the derivatives of it time and again. You're familiar with the era. And it's just not new. It's not provoking you. It makes sense. I mean,
and the thing which is strange about that is, you know, we've kind of brushed over John Hughes and we've brushed over Cameron Crowe and whatever. I mean, they have the same kind of dialect. I mean, it's still the same 80s, and yet it kind of works. I mean, I get, you know, Dylan, I know you don't like black and white movies.
Generally speaking.
But I mean, you know, you watch Citizen Kane, and it still holds up. I mean, you know, the dialogue may be different. Orson Welles may be spouting stuff you haven't heard before, but that doesn't mean that I can't emotionally latch on to it, which is what I couldn't do here.
Okay.
Which is my main problem. That's all.
So I really thought that, so you couldn't latch on at all to the Winona Ryder character?
No.
Okay. Oh, cause I thought that she was probably, if not her, I think the Heather McNamara were probably the two probably most compassionate people in the movie. Because, yeah, I mean, Heather McNamara, the other Heather, the cheerleader one, she doesn't, she's kind of the verge too, where she doesn't actually want to be part of the Heather group there, but she's afraid of not fitting in.
She's the Amanda so much, Seyfried from Mean Girls.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she, I mean, even so much though that she even wants to try and kill herself just to be part of the popular crowd, because everyone that has committed suicide in this movie gets to become like really popular, and she's afraid that her stature in high school is failing. And so she goes, well, hey, look, I want to be part of the popular kids. And Veronica Sawyer stops her and says, look, if everyone was happy, you would not be a human being. You would be a game show host. Another great line. I mean, come on now.
One of the lines that I liked best rewatching it this weekend was when the mother chided Winona about, you know, every time that a kid says, you know, I'm sick of being treated like a kid, I want to be treated like an adult, they're probably being treated like an adult.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just a little thing I thought was interesting. With the parents, Winona Ryder's parents, I kind of like – I didn't really understand why they did it, but I thought it was interesting. Each time she has to go back to the house or whatever, they're sitting in the same spot. The dad was reading a book the one time and smoking a cigarette, and he asked the same question, and Winona Ryder provides the same answer, and the mother still provides the same thing, and then Winona Ryder leaves because she has to get ready for something. But I thought,
did you understand
that?
Why they did that, though?
I was guessing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's satirizing parents. I really didn't. Maybe, I mean, I watched it this morning.
The monotony and
repetition
and the redundancy and the fact that, you know, the parents really aren't involved and they don't see their kid and, you know, they're not on top of things. There's no emotional.
That's what
connection.
I figured. But I mean, again, I don't think that's a fair representation either. But that's fine. I don't think parents are that uninvolved, but I mean, perhaps they were in the 80s. I don't know. I mean,
well because you never actually see most of the parents in these high school movies. You don't really see. I can't really think of like John Hughes movies where the parents really took that much of an active interest in their kids' lives. I mean, they're there, but they don't really communicate much to the kids besides the fact that, look, I'm going to be going away. Don't throw a party here. and I thought Heather's just, you know, did a good job of, like, satirizing that.
Yeah, I agree. That I think that's it was funny to watch, and, like, it's a good satirization. Again, I don't mean to be, like, this one, you know, arbiter of defending John Hughes movies.
No.
But, again, John Hughes movies, I mean, it's not like they don't show parents too often. And I mean, I don't know what you want. Do you want them to like have like another subplot of a bonding relationship between mother and, you know, daughter? I mean, I don't know. And also, a lot of the John Hughes movies are purely fixated on high school life in the school, not so much outside of school, like The Breakfast Club. I mean, we don't see him going home. We only see that one scene where what's his face gets dropped off. But again, that's not that interesting, but I don't know.
We're casting a pretty wide net here because I'm thinking of when we just say John Hughes movies, I'm thinking of there's pretty wide representation of parents even within that subsection there. I mean, you look at 16.
Ferris's parents were very attentive people.
they were also very stupid.
Clueless, but they were there. And then you look at 16 Candles, and the dad's at least was very in tune with his daughter.
Well, I haven't seen 16 Candles, but I mean, I agree. Ferris Bueller as a...
I think had the parents in this been, it would have been counter to what they were aiming for, because they were trying to show how out of touch they were and focus on the angst and the aloneness that they were feeling. So had they done that, I think it would have, you know...
I'll agree that, you know, showing like the monotonous activity of the parents very nicely fits the narrative of this film. So, I mean, I understand why they did it, and I still thought it was funny. I mean, that's it. I mean, I'm not, like, criticizing it. I'm just noting it, that's all.
Cool.
Right. And you mentioned, too, you didn't find, Veronica Sawyer character, you didn't find her to be at all sympathetic?
I found her to be. She's the only thing that helped me sit through it. Did I find her sympathetic? No. And here's why. You talked about how she kind of doesn't want to be part of the group. And there's a really simple solution to that.
Don't be a part of the group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, it doesn't take the death of 5 people to learn that message. So, and again, I understand, you know, the murdering or the suiciding, whatever, of these, you know, people. That's engaging. That's relatively interesting for some time. But if you're saying, you know, she's kind of this high and mighty moral person who understands that she shouldn't be part of the group, but she is just because, I don't buy that. I think that's this.
Well, maybe high school has changed, man, but I know that's a definite possibility in that social arena that you might get guided to a specific clique or social strata based on maybe who your parents are.
That stands true now, what you're saying. I mean, of course, people attempt to be popular and, of course, are popular for the sake of being popular, you know, to have those friends or to know the people they know. But what Jason, said is that she's aware of what's going on. And I think counter of, my experience, most of the girls aren't aware, which is sad, but it is true. So our Winona Ryder character, our protagonist, is aware of what's going on and that this popularity, you know, regime is nonsense. And I think it could have been avoided much easier. So that's kind of...
She's a little dense. What? This is what it took for her to learn it.
Yeah. But again, that's also not to poke fun at a joke. That's also inaccurate because we talked about how sixth grade she could have been in high school, but she wouldn't have made friends. And then she talks about, oh God, now I'm going to have to apply to Stratford, not Stanford, her semi-SAT school. Remember that line. So, a witty line that I'll applaud.
Yes.
So she's clearly an observant, poignant, rather, you know, intelligent woman. So you say. So I think then kind of follow. I mean, I understand following the bad guy, the bad boy, whatever, probably a good idea for her in her mind.
She just followed him mainly because he had the same interest, which is taking down, you know, all these really mean, spited people. Not so much to him just being a bad boy. It was just, hey, look, this guy has the same interest. We both don't like these people. We both want to take him down. But also, I just want to say something, too, about the Veronica Sawyer character. She was, for me, a person that was probably made fun of, you know, back when she was in junior high, became friends with these girls for a little bit, and then start to build up her social stature a little bit. Like, she goes, hey, look, now I'm part of the popular kids. But as time went on, she starts to see, well, gosh, these people are kind of horrible. They're doing all these mean things to them, and I could just leave them. I mean, yeah, she could. She could just totally leave that group and be friends
with
who she wants to be friends with. Well, yeah, that too. But also, she feels like she's doing a disservice to her school to let these people run it. I mean, she in her mind thinks that, look, I got to take these people out. These people are horrible. They add nothing at all to school. Like JD once said, Kurt and Kelly are dead. All he had left to offer the school was date rape and AIDS jokes. Oh, see, another line right there. Come on now. Citizen Kane does not have that many good lines as this movie has.
No, it has one word, which makes it all the better.
I don't think you can argue Citizen Kane against this. I think one of the perspectives we're missing, though, is a female perspective. And
yeah, you know, I agree.
We may have needed to get a female voice on this because I think it does speak a lot to, you know, the role of female protagonists in movies and how they're portrayed and that kind of thing. And you know, female adolescents and the troubles that they go through specifically, you know, I'm not equipped to deal with, but it occurred
You're
to me.
You're not equipped to deal with it, really?
No. Yeah.
No, I thought you were. No.
It's far away from my experience. But, you know, to me, it seemed like there were a lot of instances throughout the movie that represented, you know, scenes of anxiety throughout, you know, the female high school experience between, you know, potential date rape and, you know, social strata and bulimia. There were all these issues that I saw being brought up and being represented in this film that, you know, while they weren't part of my experience, I recognize that that's part of, you know, the dangers and the angst of growing up as a female individual.
Really was bulimia an 80s thing?
Well,
I mean, in
no,
high school?
Man, but,
I mean, I know it still happens now, but I mean, I know I've been to like a few different schools and never met a bulimic.
Come on, bulimia is so 87.
Very.
I think it's ebbed and flowed, but they were addressing something that, yeah, was pretty prevalent at the time.
Oh, you're beautiful. Oh. No, but another thing too, which I found to be kind of an interesting aspect to the movie, there was a scene where like Heather Chandler, she brings Veronica to a college party, and in the scene, they cut back and forth between Veronica and her boyfriend, and Heather Chandler and her other friend right there, and the scene where Heather Chandler is basically she's at a field with another guy and. The guy basically, you know, says, look, sleep with me now, otherwise, you know, you're going to not be popular. And she kind of does. You know, she doesn't want to because the very next scene, she's at a sink and she spits water at herself. She's like kind of disgusted for what she did. She's like, I'm going to sleep with you, not because I want to, because I kind of have to. Otherwise, if I don't, I'm going to be ostracized by my school. These guys are going to say, this girl doesn't put out, she's not popular enough, and I found that to be kind of a, you know, a sad stature. Hello?
It is.
Oh, okay. And then the scene
that definitely holds up. I will attest to that.
Yeah.
With personal experience, no, I'm kidding.
Shit.
No,
all right. Got, details of Sam's prom coming to life.
Oh, wow.
Fast times at Sam's high school high. No, but that definitely holds up.
And it kind of shows it too that, yeah, these people are villains, but they're more fleshed out than just being, you know, look, I'm going to be the evil mean girl and I'm just going to just make fun of all the dorks and nerds and whatnot. There's a little bit more of subtext into their characters, which I found to be very interesting. And I even liked Heather Duke's transformation, the Shannon Doherty character. Sorry, I got a little stuffed up nose here. But I like the fact she goes from being the mousy girl to be even more vicious than Heather Chandler. And it's like you said before, I think this is my first time on Skype here, so I think it was you, Dylan, that said this. That it doesn't matter. You can take out all the popular kids or whatnot, all the mean people. They're still going to sprout out again.
Right.
I think that this movie tries to say, too, that Winona Ryder, she goes through this journey wanting to take out all these unpopular kids. And I think that Danny Waters uses the kind of the satire element of murder to take them out. But you could have done either way there. She could have, like, folded them out or made a little rumor. Yeah, exactly. Humiliated them, something to get rid of them. But it doesn't matter how many of these mean people you get rid of, they're still always going to be there. And it doesn't matter if it's going to be your school life or your work life. These people are still going to be around. And I think the movie best addresses that in the end, because at the end of the movie, she saves the school from being exploded. And she basically takes control of the Heathers right there. She basically wants to be the reigning popular princess of the school. And she makes friends with the Martha Dump Truck character. And I found that to be a very much more
what a last name.
By the dump truck?
Or, well,
I don't remember her real name.
I'm going to assume that's not her given name.
but I want to ask you folks if you have heard, or if anyone has heard about the original ending to this movie.
Oh, yeah. The world ends, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. They actually, at the end of the movie, she shoots JD, and then she exits the building, like, wearing the bomb on her chest, and then it closes in on her face, and she goes, boom. And the next scene, you see all of them up in heaven, and they're having this big prom sequence where everyone is getting along. That one of the Heathers is, you know, dancing with one of the nerdy guys, and I think one of the jocks are dancing with Martha Dumptruck. Sorry, I'm being offensive right there, but and I don't know, what do you guys think about that ending? I mean, do you think that would work in the movie? Because I don't think it does.
Well, I think it would take.
Well, I think it.
It kind of goes. It kind of goes off the rails as it is, just in terms of where you think it, where it starts and where it ends.
Yeah,
and that would just be further. I don't know if I like that more or less, though.
Yeah, it just it's even more.
Yeah, I think that would be a much more overt kind of, you know, playing of its hands in terms of the themes that, you know, people need to get along and the social strata needs to be destroyed. You know, I like the ending they chose. I think they obviously chose it a little better. You know, it's a little Looney Tunes almost with with the dirty face and the cigarette. I was like, what is this, a Bugs Bunny cartoon? You know, but that's okay because it is comic and it's supposed to be comedic. Mm-hmm. But at the end, you know, Winona does come to a realization that she wouldn't have been allowed to if she had blown up. And that is that, like Sam pointed out, early in the film, she's not making her own choices. She's following the crowd. She's allowing society to put her into the structures where she belongs. At the end of the film, through this, you know, struggle that she's gone through and the awakening that she's come to, she realizes that the proper way to do things is to make her own choices, and she makes a choice as an individual to mm-hmm. befriend who she wants to befriend. And that completes the character arc. I think if she gets blown up and everybody is, you know, dancing and happy, that kind of undermines the whole thing.
Plus it doesn't match anything that she did previously in the movie. The fact that she wanted to kill herself, I mean, it just doesn't match her character at all. I mean, she was just earlier trying to save her school, and now she wants to blow it up. I didn't buy that.
All it would do is validate that one line earlier about how everybody gets along in heaven. Mm-hmm. It's like the only reason for it, I can see.
I guess if you, you know, believe in that stuff, sure, yeah.
Well, I think we've talked it round and round, so let's wrap up shop and get to our lame scores, eh?
Okay. Well, you know where I stand here right now. I give it a, you know, 4 out of 4 stars there. Love it. Brilliant satire about school life.
It's out of 5.
Oh, I'm sorry. We talk about the old taste.
We can translate that pretty easily.
5 out of 5. Sorry.
Fair enough. Folks, I wouldn't go 5 out of 5 because I think that it might have trouble withstanding the test of time, as Sam speaks to. I think it's a great example. I do think it's a clever, very clever satire. I think it's an enjoyable film. I would probably go around a 4 with this. You know, like an A minus range if I were to do a letter grade.
Okay.
Sam?
I'll be generous and give it 2 out of 5 lambs.
Dude, and that's generous.
I'm just below you, folks. I'm going to go with a 3.5. I enjoy it. I obviously don't think it's the classic on the level that the Verne does, but it's got some interesting things to say. It's got some good dialogue. It's got some issues. It's got some good performances. 3.5, 4, somewhere in that range.
It doesn't have just good dialogue, my friend. It's got great dialogue. Okay. Every single line in that movie is a gem. It is like, I saw an interview with Winona Ryder calling it The Catcher in the Rye of like teen comedy strips, and it is just gold. Everything these characters say, it's one of the movies, Spaceballs that I just quote constantly. So
I would back Vern up to the extent that this is a very cult movie, that there are people, a lot of people out there that do feel very strongly
very
about
passionate,
it.
Passionate, yes.
Yeah, they do have, it does have a devoted following. Okay. You didn't quite get that cross-section here, the representation in the panel, but yeah, it's out there, Vern. It definitely is. So,
well, I appreciate all the opinions about the movie. Yeah.
And I just have to say, before we close up shop on it, I love my dead gay son.
Yeah.
Which has always been my favorite line of the movie. Okay. As with the prior movie, the months on the day this episode is posted, we'll also be listing any reviews or articles sent in by LAM members for the film. In addition, the poll for next month's film will go up, so please go out and vote. If you're championing a film, get out there and campaign for it. If you would like to volunteer to champion a film in the future, keep an eye out for announcements on the LAM site, Facebook, Twitter, etc. for the call. On that note, let's get angry. We'll be back with our rants of the week after these words from a fellow LAM Podcasting Network show.
Do you like movie podcasts hosted by inebriated people? That's Kai with the cracking voice and Heather's touched by evil. One thinks he's Spider-Man, the other is a ninja. It's the Midnight Lessons Podcast, it's the Milfcast.
Hey everybody, I'm Kai.
And I'm Heather.
And we are the hosts of Milfcast, the Man I Love Films podcast, the unofficial, official podcast of ManILoveFilms.com. This is the podcast where we like to talk about what we've been watching, talk about movies, but mainly we just like to drink, be silly, and play a whole bunch of games. So we think every other week you should grab a drink, snuggle up, and let us make sweet love to your ears.
Otherwise, we'll make sweet love to your couch.
So come and find us on iTunes. Just search for Milfcast.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Sam, what is grinding your gears?
Okay. I just wanted to kind of express my disdain for, like, the immediate backlash towards the Avengers. Now, how many... I know Fog... Fogs.
Yes.
You've seen it.
Yes.
I don't know about you two.
I've seen it.
Not yet.
Okay.
I wasn't aware that there was a backlash already. That was quick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyways, it's received, like, really great reviews. Fogs, you gave it an A++. I read that yesterday.
I did.
Yeah. It had opened, you know, incredibly well to audiences.
200 million, yeah. I heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I that's.
You can go ahead.
No, I'm
stunned. It's stunning.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm just tired of whenever a commercial film, you know, is positively spoken about by critics or just pretty much everyone, there's always individuals who dislike the movie for the sake of disliking the movie.
You know what, Sam? I was so freaking tempted. There was part of me that wanted to be that guy. I'll tell you, I'll speak to that condition, Sam, and I'll volunteer myself up. Like, I was one of the last people on Earth to see the Avengers, it felt like. Because it opened overseas first. Wow. Someone opened a door?
No, that was the mic moving.
Oh, okay. Sounded like you were opening a trap door and feeding one of your victims or something. Anyways.
No, I do that at night.
Okay. Damn prom. So it opened overseas first, so we had all those reviews, and then there's the early screenings and all that, and the critics that get to see it first, and we had all those reviews.
That's me.
And, you know, being wired in, you see all the tweets, you see all the glowing stuff, and literally, like, for my own edification at one point, I counted in my Twitter feed, 20 tweets, and out of them, 8 of them were Avengers related. This was Friday morning, and I was just like, dude, enough. I mean, it just made me want to hate it, you know?
Yeah.
But, of course, I saw it, and, you know, reason wins out. You can't backlash if it's something awesome. And it was awesome.
I understand that. I was on the same level as you, and I saw it on Tuesday at the press screening. And I still felt like, God damn, how much are we going to talk about this movie that will probably not even be that good? And then, of course, it's good.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's perfectly acceptable not to like the Avengers. I mean, it's not you know, necessarily a deep movie with, you know, insights or philosophical undertones. I mean, that's fine. But you can deny, but from my perspective, it's pretty great entertainment. But anyway, my point is, this sort of like unprecedented backlash, like it always happens, just when like a select individuals decide to rag on a film because it's too mainstream or because everyone else likes it. I think that that's just really like kind of petty, not even criticism. It's just saying like, oh, it's just an action movie, or comic book movies aren't very good, or like, I think the antagonist of the movie should offer up some valuable criticism instead of just disliking it for the sake of disliking it, or being the odd one in the crowd. And I think that's not acceptable at all. So,
yeah, I mean, the same thing too can be said about Joss Whedon's earlier movie, The Cabin in the Woods, because I've been seeing a lot of comments going, "What do you mean you didn't like this movie? This movie was awesome. You know, if you don't like this movie, you're an idiot." And I love the movie a lot, but I totally understand why people did not like that movie. And I don't think those people are wrong in not liking the movie.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, this is just one area of the aspects that I just wanted to kind of express. Sure. I mean, you could totally go into, which has already been spoken about, just the plethora of misogynistic comments from people, for those who dislike it, especially, I mean, if you look on Rotten Tomatoes, there's like 300 comments on this one woman's negative review. And that's like...
Oh, it's horrible.
It's just another thing that's like exactly why people have the perception they do about people who love comic books. And that's exactly why, you know, that stereotype lingers on today, is because they make these misogynistic comments like, oh, you're a woman, you can't review this movie, or did you sleep during the whole thing, or you don't know what the Hulk even is. Like, that's not fair to say. I mean, obviously that's prejudice, and it's ridiculous, and obviously it angers me.
And a movie should actually just be going for a general audience, you know, not everyone knows comic books, so, no.
Yeah. I mean, I don't read comic books,
exactly, neither do I. Yeah.
All right. Folks.
Yeah, I have a specific rant. It's really just burning me over the past couple of days, and, you know, it's very narrow in spectrum, so I'll keep it short, but WordPress tinkered with something, and now as a default setting, when someone leaves a comment on a WordPress blog, the box that is notify me of follow-up comments via email is checked.
And oh, yeah.
It used to be unchecked, and you would have to check it if you wanted it. Now the default is it's checked. So, and I'm hyper aware of it, because as a blogger, I'm worried about what my blog sends out to other people. But I've been commenting on other blogs, and even I forget to uncheck the stupid thing. So I'm getting follow-up emails from other blogs that I don't want. And, it's just a pain. I don't want that happening to people unless they want it. So fix it, WordPress.
Anyone wants
damn right.
It.
I'm on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, I have no...
You think it should default to that?
I don't know if I necessarily think it should, but I'm glad it does, because I always want to check it. It's rare that I wouldn't want to.
What about, don't you go to any blogs that, like, get a lot of comments, and you're like, dude,
yeah. Folksmoviereviews.com?
Hey, man, we don't have to go there. Can we just stay general?
I even like it for ones like that. I mean, I can't say I read a ton of sites that get 300 comments on a post, so it's not really an issue. If I get 40 or 50 emails, if it starts to bother me, I'll go and subscribe to it, but most of the time it doesn't, because, I don't know, it's worth the time it takes to delete as opposed to not getting them. And,
I don't know.
And I'm just saying, if it's unchecked, I'm going to check that box 99 times.
I already get a lot of emails. Like, I don't want... Like, I woke up today with, like, 20 emails, like, 8 of them from the Velvet Cafe, which is a great site run by Jessica's. I don't think she has her last name out there, if you haven't been there. But I just noticed it today. So, and I don't think I've subscribed to Fog. Folks, God damn it. What the hell? I can't do it.
You haven't been around it in a little while, Sam, and they just changed that setting. So I'm concerned as a blogger about what my blog does with and to the people that comment on my site. And, you know, it's just something that now could happen without thinking about it. And I'd rather have them make a choice than be unaware of it and suddenly my blog is contacting them outside of the realm of what they wished without their knowledge or without them thinking about it. It's easy. It's easy to slip this one by the goalie, and I don't want to do that to people.
Dylan, if you're interested enough in the conversation, you're going to go back without having to get an email notification.
No.
If
I comment on a bunch of sites in a day, am I going to go back the next day to 20, 30 different sites? No way.
I didn't know about the proliferation of your comments. I don't comment that much, and when I do, I try to invest some time into it. So
I don't want to have to remember, which sites did I comment on in any given day. I want to check. I'm the one who always bitches that on Blogger you don't have. When people don't have the subscribe to comments checkbox,
right?
Because certain configurations don't have it. Anyway, I get your point, folks.
Man, I even got an opinion on this issue. If I do see a post I like, I'll comment on it. But I don't always, you know, go back and check it again. And I have Blogger, so. I don't know the problems at all about WordPress because I don't have it. So.
Well, what is your rant for us, Aaron?
All right. Well, my rant actually is an earlier rant that I've had before. But my rant is about parents who bring little infants with them to R-rated movies. And more specifically, horror movies.
Yes.
Don't bring your damn kids to a horror movie. Because I don't want to hear them screaming and yelling. In fact, it happened recently again with Cabin in the Woods. Parent brought their little two-year-old, and I think it was – well, she was still walking, but not very well. So two-year-old, and I think she was three, but she looked – anyways, brought them in to see the movie, brought them down, and I had a comment on this. Like, look, why? Why you bring your kids to the movies? And she goes, well, I couldn't find a sitter and everything like that. And,
you don't go to the movies.
Then you just don't go, okay?
And she not going me. Is not an option.
and with it too, it's like she goes, well, you know, these kids have seen these movies before; they'll be good, and they weren't.
No, their definition they cried. Of a little different.
That's just like my biggest rant at all is like parents who bring kids to movies, especially R-rated movies.
I'm sure the kids just wanted to see the great satire of Josh Whedon. Don't be ridiculous.
I'm sure they're
probably crying at how funny it was.
They were.
Okay.
I was going to say we need just a code word for that rant. We can just say, you know, like taco, and that'll mean parents bringing kids to their movies.
Well, like that.
It'll be shortened. Anyway, I got a rant for you. It's pretty trivial when we get right down to it, but I want to do something a little different. We don't normally do this for rants, but I'm going to play a little game with you guys. I'm going to read you some dialogue taken from trailers, and I want to see if you can guess the movie.
Nice.
Okay, here's the first one. And I'm going to say blank blank when they say a name, because they say a name in like all of these.
Nice.
First up. Navy SEAL blank blank
battleship
has seen action in every corner of the globe, but for his next assignment he's going to the one place his skills mean nothing.
Battleship 2.
No, The Spy Next Door, Jackie Chan.
Wow.
Incorrect.
Lord. It's some kind of babysit the kids movie.
Let me give you another sitter. One
The Sitter. One of those Vin Diesel, he's in charge of the kids.
Crossfire.
Here comes number two. When it comes to intergalactic confrontation, no one can beat blank blank. But now he's about to land in a place even he isn't prepared for. Okay, number three.
Are these recent movies?
Secret agent blank blank has taken down dictators, terrorists, and even empires, but he's about to face his toughest assignment yet.
That's the Jackie Chan one.
You're correct on that.
Next up.
Thank you, Sir Phobos.
He's wrestled the biggest and the baddest, but now he's about to face the toughest fight of all. Kids. And finally, in the New York City Underground, there are gangsters. This one's a little different. In the New York City Underground, there are gangsters, killers, and corrupt cops. But today, the most wanted person in the city is a 12-year-old girl.
Safe.
Safe, yeah.
So that was the one that spurred this on. And
I got 2 out of 5. That's not bad, dude.
And I know that one's a little different, Safe, because it's not a comedy. It's much more of an action drama than the rest of these. But
it's pretty comedic, though.
Oh, my God, these fucking trailers. I hate them. They're all the same. The first one was for The Pacifier with Vin Diesel.
Ah, if I could have only come up with the name.
The next one was Suburban Commando with Hulk Hogan. Next, as folks point out, was Spy Next Door, and just before Safe, we had Mr. Nanny, also with Hulk Hogan. If the rest,
so none of them were Battleship.
No,
Hulk Hogan did 2 of those.
Yeah.
That just sucks.
Well,
dude.
The sad thing is, both of his are actually a little bit different. The Jackie Chan one and then the Vin Diesel one. I could have sworn there's more like those two, because those two are almost exactly the same. And I went and watched the one for Kindergarten Cop in. Hey, what do you know? It's a better movie. It's got a different trailer. It actually starts off with, I don't know, just kids. It doesn't. This bait and switch where they try and make you see the toughest motherfucker in blah 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 is about to face blah blah blah, and it's always the same goddamn thing. And that Safe trailer is the same thing too. And I was just like, oh, I hate these things.
Yeah, for me, if a movie's not from like the 80s or early 90s, I hate, or a foreign movie, I hate narration in a trailer. I just hate it.
Yeah. That doesn't leave very many trailers for you.
In a world where blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, something like that. Guys, just get
I don't think that. Right? I don't. I mean, I've, like, multiple times on the show, I've talked about how I don't watch trailers at home for the sake of.
Stop that, yeah.
Yeah, for the sake. I mean, but that's your job, right? Trailer trash, yeah.
I don't recommend people read it.
Okay. That's why they call it trash, you see. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. I'm trash.
Okay. Anyway.
Dylan, it reminds me, did you ever see the Seinfeld promo for what was his movie called there? Was it Comedian, where it had the voiceover guy and in a world, and Jerry's like, no, it's not one of those movies, and he's like, in a time.
That was where we actually got to see him in the studio, wasn't it? What's his name? Yeah. His name is Don something. He died not too long ago.
Oh, you know, actually, speaking of like that voice, did you see that kid that can do like the voiceover? Did you see that?
No.
Did you see that? Really?
No.
He's like a 14-year-old kid with that exact voice, like the Don guy, who can do it, and it's so weird. It's like, did you guys see the? This is totally off topic. The homeless guy. But like
the voice
of gold.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same sort of thing.
Wow.
Anyway, back on the trailer thing.
And here, folks, I thought you were going to talk about Sack Lunch. I'm so disappointed. Sorry.
The what?
Sack Lunch.
That was a reference to a specific Seinfeld movie thing that they had on the TV show.
No, sorry.
All right, that's my rant. Anyway, those trailers suck, and I don't look forward to any more tough guys taking care of kids movies because they're all the same. Enough anger, it's happy time.
That sounds good. I'll have that. Feels good to mingle with these laid-back country folk, don't it, Harry? I like it a lot.
Folks, rave for us.
You know, I'm going to cut it short because we did touch on it during Sam's rant, but I was going to rave about the Avengers. Dude, it is the consummate summer piece of entertainment.
No, that's Battleship.
No, see, I think that's a good parallel. The Battleship is the empty, kind of soulless, hollow, you know. Well, I'm speaking about this movie as if I've seen it. I don't know what Battleship is going to be. For all I know, it's going to be the greatest
thing. You're describing Men in Black 3, actually.
Yeah, that maybe that, you know, is going to be great, too. But the Avengers achieves everything you could possibly want from a trip to the cinema where you just want to enjoy yourself, laugh, have some action and excitement. I mean, it was just a great time at the theater. People applauded at the end, like with a rousing round of applause. I thought it was great. I had a great time at the movies. It reminded me why I love the movies.
I will chime in here as well because that was going to be my rave too.
Was it?
Slightly different perspective. I was going back weeks and months. I was one of the naysayers of the Avengers who thought it was going to be crappy and disappoint a bunch of people. So yeah, I got to eat a little crow. It was good. I don't think it's the 5 out of 5 feats
that I gave
so many
it.
I'm a Dylan.
That's a little overkill. It's got a lot of issues, but for popcorn entertainment and all what you just said, it nails it. I mean, it's a fun fucking movie. It's funny. And it's got shitloads of action. So,
right, well, to follow, I was actually going to talk about the Avengers. I was going to talk about just briefly last weekend. For those who read my site, which I'm not sure anyone here does, I'm not really positive. But I attended Ebertfest last week, which is Roger Ebert's film festival in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. Kind of my first film festival, so that was. An interesting experience. I kind of wrote about it, but I just wanted to mention it. But really, what I found to take away from, besides meeting Roger, which is an experience in and of itself, the audience cannot be duplicated there. Attentive, engaged, interactive with the Q&A afterwards. Met Jeff Nichols and Michael Shannon, among other people. And it was a great experience. So,
was there a movie that you haven't seen before that you really liked?
Most of them I hadn't seen. A foreign film that won last year Oscar called The Separation, very good. And a movie directed by Farrah Farmiga, which is I'm sure most of you know
Higher
who she
Ground.
Is. Yeah, Higher Ground. She and the person whose memoir it was based off of in the co-writer of the screenplay was there for a Q&A. And that was good. And I saw Citizen Kane on the big screen, which was a good experience. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. It was a good time. So, yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, I had two, raves here, but we don't have time here. So I'll just say one. Right now, I do want to rave a site. It's the Alex Joski, joskireviews.geekjuicemedia.com. Sade is very funny. He has things like antisocial commentaries, where he does like reviews on a lot of B movies, a lot of features from The Asylum, and they're very funny. He also has the Crazen videos where he reviews a bunch of like Japanese movies from
the '60s.
What's that?
A person named Nolan. I don't know who knows.
Morgan Bin Review.
Yeah.
Okay.
He kind of reviews B movies.
I'll check that out too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my rave right there. I'm gonna just want to pimp out his site a little bit, but yeah, that's my rave. The Joski reviews and been watching all those commentaries and videos. So yeah.
Good deal. All right, let's play some games.
Sweetness.
Last Lamb Standing.
For your first game, the order is going to be Vern, Sam, Fogues.
Great.
Your subject is Gwyneth Paltrow.
Sliding doors.
Who's Gwyneth Paltrow again? Iron Man.
Iron Man 2.
Oh, Shakespeare in Love.
The Avengers.
There we go. I was waiting for that one.
7.
Ooh. Gosh. Oh. Crap. Oh, gosh. I know to fail this one right now. Oh.
Your preparation didn't work, did it?
No, not at all.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2. It's funny. It's too bad I don't start with 7. And
Iron Man 2?
No,
it's already been said.
Yeah.
Time's up. All right. Sam?
Okay, the Michael Douglas movie, The Perfect Crime or The Perfect Murder?
A Perfect Murder, I'll give it to you on that.
There we go.
Great Expectations.
Ah, okay, The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Contagion.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh. Shit, okay, you have to give me like a minute here. Let me think. Shoot, come on.
I don't know about a minute.
Okay, hold on. Gwyneth Paltrow. Jesus Christ, there's got to be something. Obviously, there's something.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, You're going to hit yourself. One. Folks, what else you got?
I don't need anything else. I just won. But I don't know. It would have been tough.
Really?
It would have been tough.
Okay.
I think so.
How about this one? Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh. Yeah,
that's a good one.
We also got Country Strong.
Country Strong. Motherfucker. That's it. I've seen that.
Two Lovers. The Good Knight. Running with Scissors. Love and Other Disasters. Infamous. Proof. Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. Sylvia. View from the Top. Possession. Shallow Hal.
Gosh, Shallow
Hal. Did a lot of movies that nobody cared about in the 2000s.
Yes.
The Anniversary Party. Bounce. Duets. Hush. Emma, The Pallbearer, Hard Eight, Jefferson in Paris, played a student in higher learning. I was not aware of that. Flesh and Bone, Malice, Hook. Guy, got to get the cameo in Hook.
Oh.
That's just about it.
So. Wow.
Congrats.
I'm actually surprised that none of those movies would have made me go, God, yeah, I can't believe I missed that.
Royal Tenenbaums, come on, man.
Shallow Hal for me. I can't believe I ever got that.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have come up with Tenenbaums. I mean, maybe.
What you got for us, folks?
All right. Seeing as it's on your potentials list, and I just watched him in Community, Chevy Chase.
Give us the order first.
Let's go with you're up first, Sam, and then Vern.
Okay, I better win this. And I shall start with Fletch.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
National Lampoon's Vacation.
European Vacation.
Is Lampoon's Vacation and Christmas Vacation? No? Is that the same thing, is it?
No, they're different movies.
Okay, yeah, Christmas Vacation.
Is it my turn?
It
is.
Yes.
Funny Farm.
Caddyshack.
Okay, I'm out. I do not know Chevy Chase, so I'm out.
Going the distance on this one, Vern.
Five, four, three, two, and one.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Caddyshack 2.
The Reckoning.
What did you say, Vern?
I said
was
Caddyshack
that
2, The Reckoning.
Oh.
Oh. Well, I'm a flake, let us know.
Still got more sequels out there, hint, hint.
Oh, there's plenty of them.
Oh, that's right, Vegas Vacation.
There you go.
Helping out the competition.
Thank you.
How about Fletch Lives?
I think you're doing it just to show off.
I am.
String them along.
I got
them. No, not yet. Not for the meatball.
Yeah, I got to get through some other ones before this ends.
Oh, gosh, why am I blanking? I'm not thinking of these right now at all. I went through all the National Lampoon's movies and said that one.
In five.
Yeah, four. Three,
yeah, I'm out. I'm out.
And one victory. Dylan, is it even worth asking you? Did you have any more?
I got five written down right now.
Oh, jeez.
Nobody said Spies Like Us, right?
Oh, god damn it.
There's going to be a lot of them that are the goddamn
Three Amigos.
The Three Amigos is another one I would think would use the goddamn.
The
two Goldie Hawn ones, did you have those?
No, let me just run through them real quick. They're ones that nobody's going to say goddamn for. Cops and Robbersons.
Oh, damn it.
Man of the House. A little Jonathan Taylor Thomas action right there. I think he's in it anyway. Deal of the Century. Which came out in like the early 80s or late 70s or something like that.
I would have had to have brought up the two ones with Goldie Hawn with Seems Like Old Times and Foul Play. I think those are both great flicks.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, and then he's got a bunch of other crap that nobody wants to relive. Yeah.
Wait, you can prepare for days for this, you know, game, but then once you actually get on the air, mine just goes blank. My mind just went blank.
How would you prepare?
How would you prepare?
That's just on IMDb cranking through names.
I was just trying to remember the names there, but yeah.
I feel kind of bad. I mean, if I hadn't won on Chevy Chase, I would have been ostracized from the Chevy Chase community that doesn't exist. But Anyway, that's going to do it for today's show. As always, we here at the Lambcast love new blood. If you're a lamb and would like to join us, information about upcoming shows can be found in a thread over at the Lamb Forums. You can find the link to the forums in the left sidebar of the Lamb. The Lambcast and the Lamb can also be found and liked on Facebook as well as Twitter at Lamba. As for today's show, I'd like to thank the Vern.
Corn Nuts.
The Vern's Video Vanguard. Same for Goso, Duke of the Movies.
That was pretty fun, I'm not going to lie. I miss being on the show.
It's good to have you back, Sam. And finally, folks, that's all I'm saying, folks.
Let's go get a slushie.